Hello and welcome to Red Lips and Stilettos podcast. I'm Kerry, your host and founder of Red Lips and Stilettos. Here we are removing that competitive gap and giving you as the beauty professional a voice to be heard within our industry. This is a platform created and dedicated to the beauty industry professionals, giving you new ideas, possibilities, and options to consider for your career. We serve to help connect you to the beauty professionals who've been there, done that, and experienced a world and more of what our professional beauty industry has to offer. Starting a beauty business, making that business a huge success, to working in a spa on a cruise ship. You name it, we'll be talking about it right here. This is Red Lips and Stilettos. Our guest today is Ursula Brett. Ursula is an icon in the hairdressing industry. She has become increasingly influential due to her social media and marketing skills. She's not only highly creative, but her vision for the sector and her values have really set her apart. She started her career working for the American orthopedic foot care brand Shearing Plough, and then went on to work at Revlon in marketing. She has spent a large part of her career at Twin Care International managing brand representatives, which resulted in her promotion to the position of marketing manager for Redken. She later worked with very well-known brands like Paul Mitchell, Matisse, and OPI. Ursula is extremely comfortable establishing brands and promoting products in the hairdressing industry, and she gathers supporters wherever she goes. She created and curated Hairstyles South Africa, which has received huge support nationally over the last 2 years and is fast becoming the go-to person for anything digital and social media related. Ursula is a trendsetter and can give any millennial a run for their money, even when discussing pop culture. Welcome to the show, Ursula.
Hi there, Kerry. It's so nice to meet you, as they say nowadays, even though it's virtual.
I know, right? It's so nice to meet you too. How are you doing?
I'm all good. Thank you so much. Just also, I think like a lot of people having to adapt their businesses and their lifestyles to everything that's been going on. But yeah, we carry on. And I think if you're following your passion, it might not pay the bills always, but it's very exciting.
Oh, no, exactly. I think this year, 2020, exciting would be an optimistic word to use, I'd say.
Yes, absolutely. I love the name of your podcast and Red Lips and Stilettos. I think it's fabulous.
Yeah, I think it's for entrepreneurial women. It's just a nice symbol for them, you know, having, yeah. I think red lips for me is just, it's like a mask. If I'm wearing red lipstick, I feel like a powerhouse. And then of course, with the higher the stilettos, it just gives me that extra height that I actually need.
100%. Those are two things that will make you feel more like a woman than most things. Definitely.
So Ursula, I'd love to get started, with your interview, and I'd love you to share with us the story of how you got started in the hair and beauty industry.
Okay, so yeah, thanks for having me on. So many years ago, I won't say what decade it was, but it was a long time ago. When I was young, I've always had a passion for fashion, hair and beauty, and anything to do with that kind of thing. And in those days, there was no there were no social media platforms, there was no internet, there was no such thing as a computer or a laptop or a cell phone or anything like that. But there were fashion magazines, which were fabulous. And my mom would buy those on a regular basis. And I found myself as a young teenager going through those and actually cutting out images of the fashion models and the hairstyles and all the brands and things and sticking them into like a scrapbook. And writing like these are the latest trends and things like that. So I've always liked to follow the trends and see what it is out there. So, that started at an early age. And it must have been something because of that attracted me into my first job, which, although I was doing secretarial work in the very beginning, which a lot of girls did in those days, I worked for a company that did one of their brands that they had was Maybelline. And so I was exposed from then already to beauty and that sort of thing. And then many years later, when the company closed down, Revlon came poaching for staff, and I worked at Revlon for a while. And that opened up a whole lot of doors to a whole lot of other to a whole lot of other industries and things like that. So
Okay, I can just imagine. It sounds like a really exciting experience and journey that you've been on.
yes, I would say that nowadays you can switch onto Instagram, and I've got a daughter who's 21, and she's a makeup artist and an influencer in a bit of her own little right.
Yeah.
She, it's so easy now to see all the brands, and so I know what all those brands are, thanks to her, and what the trends are and things like that. And I've always been interested in it, but in those days, you didn't really know what that was. So hairdressers were very much a part of traveling overseas to find out what were the trends that were coming to South Africa, and bringing back that information here and teaching consumers one-on-one. I mean, also in the earlier days, if you went into a salon, you might not know if you're a cool or a warm skin tone. So hairdressers would actually sit and give you a full consultation and tell you
Yeah.
what sort of clothes would suit you, and these are the new hairstyles that are coming into South Africa. So that's how we learnt. In South Africa, we didn't really have a lot of people in the earlier days coming here to teach, because we had a lot of sanctions in South Africa. But a lot of the people more my age group now traveled all over the world, and a lot still do actually, to learn what the trends are and the techniques are, and bring those back. Whereas now you can actually watch a lot of that online and learn that. I just think that it's very different doing it in real life. So yeah,
Yeah.
and I was the person who always had the funky hair. So if it was short and platinum with a pink tail down the back, I was the person who did that, So,
Was that actually a style
that was
that
actually a thing. It sounds revolting, but it was actually a thing.
had? Oh my goodness. I would love to see photos of
It's
that.
hilarious. And sometimes when I post photos from the 80s, the hair was enormous. It's almost as big as the shoulder
Yeah.
pads.
Yeah, it's crazy how trends have completely changed, but often they
Yes.
actually end up, being repeated and coming back,
Oh, that's
with
very much.
fashion and
Yes.
yeah, with beauty. I'm just waiting at the moment with the brow trends. It's the
Yes.
Nike tech, right? The like
Oh,
upside down Nike tech.
my
So
word.
we're waiting for that to go to the thin
Yes.
tweeze brow.
Yes, which they did in the 60s. I mean, I
Yes.
re that listen, the 60s was before my time. I'm just saying it wasn't that far back. But I remember my mom saying to me, when I would wear certain outfits, and that she remembers those things from when she was young. So even what I was doing in those days was already being repeated. But I like
Yeah.
the fact that now trends, I think, are not, you don't have to be specific to what is in fashion. In the
Yeah.
earlier days, what was in fashion was basically all you really got in the stores. So if it was purple, and purple was the color, for example, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, you couldn't really get anything other than that, and with shoulder pads. Now I think there's something for everybody. So
Yeah.
if you love wearing lots of makeup, and you love a heavy eye and something that's smoky, even though that's kind of faded away now over the last few years, then you can still do that. Nobody kind of But trends are also changing all the time, where people don't even notice. For example, we would never have thought 2 or 3 years ago anybody would be wearing green. And green has become so big that you don't even
Yeah.
notice that it's in furniture now, and it's in clothing. And you wouldn't have thought, you would have thought, I would never wear a green shirt, and
Yeah.
people are doing that. So it moves all the time, and I found it very fascinating. But
But I think also with what you mentioned with influencers,
yes.
I think that's also where there's been quite a huge shift with trends and with fashion and beauty, because an influencer with a large audience,
Yes.
they kind of create their own trend, and yeah, their own unique fashion sense.
Yes.
So that's also been quite a change.
Yes, 100%. I mean, just on a huge global scale, the Kardashians, nobody came along in my lifetime that I know who has made such a difference and can overnight change the way people look or want to look, as, say, Kim Kardashian did in the very beginning. Nobody looked
like
that. I always tell my daughter, like, you're so lucky that curvy fashion is in now. I mean, in the 80s, you had to be kind of stick thin and not have large breasts and all that kind of stuff. You know, you needed to be, like, skinny with almost like your bones sticking out. Now, I mean, these people have brought along just one person and a family that have changed the whole world to look a different way. And then moving into South African influences, I love our girls, and I will always support South African women can teach us our South African ways and the way they have embraced social media and that sort of thing. So, yeah. So when I moved away from Revlon, I went and worked at a company that was doing Redken, which is still and was a very big brand in those days. And we're the first professional hair brand that actually used science in the way that they made their brand. And so they were the pioneers of retailing hair products through hair salons. So it had to be prescribed by a professional. And that was the only brand that did it in the very early days. I mean, L'Oreal was around. They've also been around for a very long time. But as far as I know, Redken were the pioneers of that. So I became the Redken brand for a very long time. And then became very close with the salons and the stylists. And we would put on we would bring people from overseas to train on these massive, massive stages at the Carlton Center in Johannesburg town. And everything was glamorous and big and bold and Americanized. And people just lapped it up because there was a kind of a lack of it in South Africa. So those times were really fun and really exciting. And the hairdressers looked forward to it so much, as a way of getting away from just standing behind their chairs all the time.
Yeah.
And not just going to learn about hair, because there's a whole science around hair. And you couldn't pick up a laptop or a computer and go and Google, oh, what is hair made up of? Oh, hair's actually got a pH balance. And, you know, you need to know these different things about it. You literally had to go to the brands where they would teach you the science of hair. So I was very involved with people that taught those kind of things. So, you know, when you're in an industry, when it's kind of in its infancy, even though it might not have been overseas, but it was like that here, you watch it grow. So we grew from this small sort of one brand or two brand company to something much bigger, and then watched how everything flourished. I mean, there's so many other brands now. And that, even some of the supermarket brands, the hairdressers are going to kill me for saying this, but even some of the supermarket brands have come with the science, and they've had the money to do the scientific side of learning about that, and including some of the fantastic elements into those shampoos and conditioners. But there's still nothing like a professional shampoo and conditioner, in my opinion, especially one that is created and prescribed by a hairdresser. And I'm not being biased, because I'm not a hairdresser. I never have been, but I just appreciate them and I understand them, and I think they're amazing at their craft. So, yeah.
But I must say, with what you were saying, when you're working with Redken, I would see that as being the pioneers of giving hairstylists and hairdressers that credibility. Because I think before that, they wouldn't have had to be prescribed the treatment you need for your hair. That gives the hairstylist credibility. Yeah. You know, it makes them professional. So that must have been also quite a catalyst in the industry.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And that's actually what made hairdressers fall in love with brands that looked after them, because it was a promise that we made, that the brand made, that we would never, ever sell through any supermarkets or other chains, that it always would have to be prescribed by a professional. Yes, so that made them fall in love with what we were doing. So that helped us form great relationships with them from a business point of view. And then I got into marketing a lot and supporting the sales team and the education team along the way. I was there when a lot of that happened and when we created the very first sort of Hairstyles South Africa, Hairstylist of the Year. It was the very first one we did in 1990. Nobody had done anything like that as far as recognizing stylists in South Africa and giving them their own platform and showing off their work, not just on a stage, but in a portfolio of all the work that they had created over the years. So, we brought them to the forefront, I think, and gave them a good name because, I mean, my mom was a hairdresser, funnily enough, from the time she was 17. But I don't think there was a very good connotation that went behind being a hairdresser in those days. When I say that, I mean, nobody thought that those people would ever be like leaders or would make money. I mean, some of the top hairdressers in South Africa are absolute geniuses at their craft. The ones that are fantastic business people have also made themselves a lot of money and done so well. So it's wonderful to have seen the early days when nobody was like that to now where they are. I mean, there's some of them that are absolute gurus, you know? So, yeah, it's
I think
fantastic.
in the movie Grease, there's that what was her name in the movie Grease, and she went to study to beauty school, and she ended up with pink hair. Frenchie, I think her name was Frenchie, and I think that's the stigma that the beauty industry has is the beauty and the hair industry. It's that stigma that it's you're not actually a leader, or you're not actually a business owner or an entrepreneur. So I think that's where it is changing massively. I think there is still a bit of a stigma, but it's definitely changing. More people are becoming aware of the potential and the success you can have if you have got a skill, like a practical skill that you can take anywhere in the world, start your own business. Work for product houses, it does open a lot of doors.
Absolutely 100%. I mean, that movie Grease, even though it came out in the late 70s or 80s, it was set in the 50s. And that song that girl sang was actually like Beauty School Dropout, which was exactly what we're talking about. And I mean, I would say it's 100% not like that anymore. And you know, if you look at people in that run spas and beauty salons and stuff, they might be a little bit more business orientated, but I don't think people have that stigma anymore. I mean, you walk into those places, you feel like a million bucks. Nobody can make you feel as good as when you've gone and had yourself pampered head to toe, and can spend some time even talking to your hairdresser about any of your troubles if you want, and they will tell you stories that you will laugh your head off because they work very hard, but they've also known how to play very hard over the years. So there's been a lot of fun. And then you know what happened years later is that I enjoyed my job so much in the very beginning. I couldn't wait for Mondays and I didn't want Fridays to come. And I used to work till 11 o'clock at night, which didn't mean I took my laptop home and worked. That meant I stayed in the office and sat behind my typewriter and or la later was a computer. We work because I enjoyed it so much. But later, I worked with brands such as Paul Mitchell, which was already established quite well in South Africa and has got its own story behind it. It's a fabulous brand. And then as well as OPI in the nail side, and Matisse, the French brand, I did other hair brands called Fudge and American Crew. And mop and things like that, you know. So what I'm trying to say is there was a flood that came in all at once at one stage. So, you know, it could be like the survival of the fittest in amongst that. You know, the hairdressers were suddenly spoilt for choice and spoilt for training and seminars and that kind of thing, which was fantastic. Competition is always good because it makes everybody up their game.
No,
And it's great
exactly.
to have a good lots to choose from, yeah.
But there nowadays there are just so many choices. I mean, going to Dis-Chem and looking at all the shampoos and conditioners and hair masks and serums, where do you begin?
Exactly. In fact, the reason why I won't go to Dis-Chem is because they have too much to choose from. So I would rather go to Fix and find a smaller shop. If you give me too much to choose from, I'm just going to walk out the door.
I know, because then you think, oh my goodness, no, there's, I don't know which one.
Exactly. And I'm talking about makeup and all that as well, you know. So it's
Yeah.
also great to watch.
No, it's very, very
Yeah.
competitive. The beauty and the hair industry is very
So
competitive.
much. And I mean, there's brands, I mean, like brands like Essence that came in and literally changed the face of what people were doing because, excuse the pun, but because of the prices that they charge, you know, people
Yeah.
had to try and keep up with that. But anyway, yeah, there's absolutely wonderful brands out there. And then,
Yeah.
yeah, so I started working on my own. I left the professional industry in 2004. I'd had two kids by then, and they needed me. And I started doing marketing for salons in particular, which
Okay.
was difficult in 2004 because there was no such thing as Facebook, believe it or not. As far as I can remember, there was no
Yeah.
Facebook. Cell phones had just sort of come out. And they were used for phoning. And that was it, and sending SMSs. So there wasn't anything like that. But yeah, so that's when I started kind of Salon Central. Although it was called something different then, it has evolved into what I now call Salon Central. You know, people were still advertising in their local newspapers, those Caxton newspapers, and they were
Yeah.
advertising in the yellow pages, which my daughter referred to the other day as the. Didn't you guys use that yellow book, which was a phone directory for businesses? So, there's a lot of hands-on marketing and promos from there.
Since 2004,
Yeah.
and when you started your own business, did you miss the corporates? Did you miss the professional hair industry, or were you definitely, was it the right decision to
No,
start
I
then?
think I definitely missed it in the beginning. I enjoyed the
Yeah.
freedom. It was so different after having worked for 20 odd years already, and now having a break, and then having a day when you didn't have to run to an office. You know, you have this kind of guilt feeling of, I'm sure I'm meant to be doing something else, and how come I have my own time to do what I need to do? But yes, it kind of was different, but I did miss the events and the interacting with the salons a lot more, and the fun we had with the people that I worked with because we worked hard and we played hard. So I did miss that,
Yeah.
but you think that when you get used to it, and then Salon Central, I mean, it's kind of morphed into something more over the last 5 years or so, into something better, I think different, because what I realized that I like to do is that I love sharing people's work, and I loved, didn't realize that I actually, even though I'm more of like an introvert and was very shy in those days, I was kind of the background person. So other people got up on stage and did all their things. I was the person that did a lot of the workings in the background. But I love to teach salons how to use the platforms and what they should know about social media, in particular based around the industry. So whether you're hair or beauty. So in 2018, as late as 2018, actually, I created courses where I would stand up and teach and train on social media. And it was a good time for, I think, for it to happen, because that is when Facebook made so many changes as far as the algorithms were concerned.
Yeah.
You could do posts, organic posts, and you would get incredible reach. And that changed and almost overnight dropped. But I mean, Mark Zuckerberg had said at that time that he was changing the way the algorithms worked because he thought it was unhealthy the way that people were interacting. We were just being bombarded with advertising all the time, and brands and things like that. So if you were a brand and you had a Facebook page, your brand would probably only, if you had 10,000 followers or 1,000 followers, only between 2 and 5% of those followers would even get to see a post of yours. And it is kind of still like that. So he encouraged people to advertise more, and then also went ahead and bought Instagram and WhatsApp at the same time, which makes it very interesting to watch now how they are joining them together. He's been...
The integration.
He's been very, very clever. You know, so, but what I'm doing now is creating those on video and teaching people online. So one of the things that Facebook have done, which I think is quite clever, is that if I was Mark Zuckerberg, the one thing that people were taught in 2018 or 2017 was you need to get people to leave Facebook to go to a landing page or your website to leave their email address so that they are now a contact of yours, and they otherwise they just belong to Facebook. And if Facebook closed tomorrow, you literally are not going to have those people. And I watch now how he's created sort of online store, and in some countries you can even add your pay portals to that. And he's created a new system now called Facebook Forms. So where you, it would already populate, if you use if you're an advertiser and you use Facebook Forms, it will populate for you the person's name, cell phone number and email address, and the person's just got to say submit or not submit, you know, whereas before you would get them to go to MailChimp and convince them, you know, to sign up. So, I mean, it's very clever, but it's also scary in a way.
Yeah, I know. So I wanted to ask you, just to go back to 2004 when you started, I know it wasn't called Salon Central then, but did you have, I mean, you must have had a huge network within that hair industry. So was it quite challenging for you to start up, or did you already have quite a good network to start up with?
No, I'm not going to lie. You know, I would say it was quite difficult, because it really took me getting on the phone or driving to a salon and saying, hey, listen, I know we've known each other for 20 years or whatever, but this is kind of what I'm doing. And a lot of salons weren't convinced about marketing. And I think what people thought was marketing in those days was not what marketing is today. And I don't think they understood what marketing is. You know, they literally thought it was, if I place an ad in the Caxton paper, that's all I need to do. But there's so much more to it. I mean, everything that we do is marketing. It's your price list. It's your logo. It's the color palette that you use. It's the way you answer the phone. It's the way you treat people when they come through the door. It's what you tell them when they're sitting at the backwash basin. It's the way you treat them when they're paying.
The entire branding.
The entire process. And that's stuff that I learned also only over the years. But I think a lot of them were really experts at that, and then there were some that weren't. So there were some that were very good at that. But when I teach marketing for salons, that is kind of the part that I like to go into before I even touch on social media, you know, and looking at your stats and your figures of what tells you the story of where you should be marketing and not marketing. So are you doing well in retail, or are you doing most of your income is or profit, let's say, is coming from doing chemical services? So, and if so, which is the one, and is it because of one person in the salon? So maybe we should do something with that person and make them like our specialists, you know, so make them think and analyze their business in different ways. But I wasn't doing that in those early days. I didn't know anything about that sort of side of things, where some of them might have, you know. So, you know, in the beginning, it was more difficult, you know, and they wanted me to create business cards for them. You know, there wasn't like now where you can go into Canva and create your own business card, and you know, you literally needed somebody who was a designer, and things have changed so much. So I ended up doing a lot of smaller what would now be considered really admin type work in some ways. And thank goodness, I think that Facebook came along and got my attention. And I've always wanted to share. I even started some other platforms where I love sharing fashion items, but not just what's fashionable and trendy, but where to find them in shops. So it's easy to go online and see where they are, what they are, but where can you find them? And not long after that, well, I say a couple of years after that, Instagram came along and they were doing that. And I was like, Instagram and Pinterest, I did that long before you guys.
No, I completely hear you. But I think with what you do with Salon Central, I think it is such a demand, because even something that I've realized recently is you spend time on Facebook, on Instagram, on social media, on Canva, and you think, oh my goodness, these are like the new things. And you think that everyone thinks like you, but they don't. I mean, there's so many people that actually have no idea. And exactly like how we were saying, you know, at Dischem, there's just too much to choose from that we end up just not choosing anything. That's the same. Do you go on Instagram? Do you build your brand on Instagram? Or do I do it on Facebook? Or should I focus on LinkedIn? Or should I do YouTube? There's just so much to choose from right now. What would your advice be to a beauty professional or a hair professional? Which would be the best platform to use to 100%. Build their brand?
So there's two answers to that. And one of them is, first of all, that stats don't lie. And each year in January, there are stats that are brought out worldwide and including South Africa that tell you exactly which platforms are the most popular by percentage, by how many people are on the internet, how many of those are using it on their mobile phones, because that tells a whole different story, because that means if you're using video, you will get more viewers watching it on because they're using mobile, but I'm digressing. And the other thing is, the most important thing actually out of all of this is to understand and know who your audience is. Because it's no good saying, right, I love Twitter, so I'm going to brand my business on Twitter. If your audience is not the type of people who are on Twitter, you're kind of wasting your time. So you need to understand, what is their age group? What are their interests? What are their hobbies? What are their favorite things to do? Where do they spend most of their time? So some of your insights and your history that you might already have on some of your social media platforms can tell you those answers. If you don't know what else to ask about that, I encourage clients to create an avatar of their ideal client. And this is what they teach you when you learn marketing, is to write down the name of a person, my ideal client. Her name is so-and-so. She's aged 34. She drives this kind of a car. She has no children. She shops at Woolworths and she loves to buy her clothes at H&M. She buys a lot of her beauty products in Dischem, but she loves to go and have her hair done at a professional salon, and she lives in this area, but she also travels around and she goes to on holidays to this and this area. So, you know, maybe when she's on holiday, this is the kind of thing she will do. It sounds very intricate, but if you can stick to focusing on exactly who that target market is, some people get very distracted by that because they think, yeah, but I also, there's people that are much younger that are interested in me. There's also people that are of different ethnicity that are also interested in me. You have to stick to that. And those people will always be drawn into that as well. It's called the shotgun approach. If you try and reach everybody, you're not going to get the right ones. So if you focus on your exact target market, you will still draw the peripheral ones. That is something that I teach in my classes as well. And I have got like templates of avatars, but Facebook actually is one of the best places to get to understand and ask questions about who these people are. If you look at Facebook and it asks you when you want to place an ad, it tells you all the hobbies, all the interests, all the demographics, and it's more than just where does this person live. It's more than just what is their age group and what is their gender. It's so much deeper, and I've actually got some printouts of exactly all the interests that ask you. If you wanted to target somebody that is a BMW driver and only uses iPhones, you can do that. You know, not many people know that. Yeah. You can go as niche as that kind of targeting. So if you look at all of them in front of you on a printout, which I've got, and I'm sure a lot of people have got it. I'm not saying I'm exclusive. You can find it online. But I do have it on my website if people yeah. want to have a look at it. It helps you create that avatar. So it's very important to know who that is. Then you can say, and what people misunderstand is they feel that Facebook is maybe for older people and Instagram is for younger people. And then along came TikTok, which is for even younger people. But TikTok, those people on TikTok who are, say, 15 to 18 or whatever, are going to, in 5 years' time and 10 years' time, be your exact target market. So you need to grow along with them. So that doesn't mean you need to ignore TikTok, but how much time and effort are you going to put into it now? Because it's a long-term thing. If you're looking for, you know, the biggest growing target market on Facebook are people in their 50s and 60s, but that makes people think that their target market isn't there. No, the biggest target market is still people aged between 24 and I think 45. You know, they're still there. And the same with Instagram. So it's very important to know what the stats are and see where those people are. And because the advertising is so cheap, I don't think people realize how cheap that advertising is. You can do test advertising. So let's try out something on Facebook and let's try out something on Instagram and let's see how many responses we get. Sometimes it can be the choice of words that you use, or it could be the choice of picture you use that can determine if people are looking at it or not. But you can play around with R100, you can play around with R1,000, you can play around with R10,000. What I'm saying is, compared to years ago, if you wanted to do a double page spread, if you're a clinique and you do a double page spread on the inside cover of Cosmopolitan magazine, that was probably costing close to R100,000. You can't make mistakes by doing things like that, you know. So it gives smaller businesses opportunities to test out different platforms and understand what the platforms are. Another thing, if you are wanting somebody else to run your social media platforms for you, do yourself a favor and have a one-on-one with them, or find out as much as you can about those platforms, because it's more than just posting. It's more than just understanding, for example, that Instagram has stories. It also has a thing called Reels. It also has IGTV. It also the importance of your bio. Is it all just about the look and feel? If you place a sponsored ad, it doesn't show up on your page, but it only shows up on the news feed. How other people who tag you have got a whole other gallery that sits on your page as well. You know, so there's a lot to know about these things. They might sound like small things, but they could be little catalysts that help you grow into something bigger.
Yeah. And what on that, what would your top five social media tips be for beauty or hair professionals?
Okay, so I would say that definitely knowing the stats, first of all, being authentic in the way that you come across. So knowing who you are and knowing what it is that you want to show to your audience. So if you're a salon and you're a salon owner, the look and feel of your place could say a lot about who you are. So you could post a lot about you talking, or maybe you telling people about who you are, or giving free information is more important, and creating a relationship with your clients is more important than trying to sell them something. It's better to gain loyalty and trust by giving free information online than it is to try and sell them something. There's nothing worse than going through ads and all you're getting is punched in the face with 50% off. I don't know if I would go to a salon or a spa that says, we're having 50% off, so you should come to us. I know nothing about them. I don't know. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go onto Instagram and see what their work looks like. So that is one thing that you need to, I do say to people. Even if you think you're not going to be on Instagram, because you're a visual industry, so whether you're doing nails or whether you're doing hair or anything like that, make sure your Instagram is on point. Because in the old days, if somebody said to you, "Oh, I really love your hair. Who does your hair for you?" Then they would have to write the phone number down and give you the address, and then you would go to that stylist. Now, what they do is they will find out who you are. They will immediately get onto Instagram and look at all your work. So that your Instagram look and feel needs to be very good. The quality of your photographs, whether it's your before or and most definitely your after, is very important. One of the things I think that stylists miss out on is they will show their before photograph and then they'll show their after photograph. Please show your after photograph first. And then if people have to scroll to see the before, they can do that. And make sure that your background, and it's very simple to make your background look good. You can have a wall that's painted like a blush pink. You can go to Builder's Warehouse and get something that looks like as if you've got bricks or a wooden wall at the background. Make sure you've got a nice ring light and that the way the person stands is very uniform. So when you scroll through that person's feed, you always look the same. It's nothing worse than seeing somebody sitting in a chair, in a salon chair. Their hair is beautiful, but you see dirty tissues in the background and you see bits of old towels. And, they don't mean to do that because they're just working. But make your photograph area that is teaching you, telling people everything about you. I always say your work is your best advert. And that marketing is just a way of flirting. So it's very important that you flirt well with just by taking great photographs of your work.
Yeah, I love that. I
Yes.
would preach that if I could. It's you just want to shake some people and be
Yes.
like, "What are you doing?" But I need to
I'd love
lead them to you, I think, so you
that.
can, yeah. And Ursula, what is next for you? What is next for you? What is next for
So
Salon
Salon Central as a
Central?
whole has been sort of backwards and forwards, where I've been using it as a platform to book classes and travel around the country and teach these kind of in boardrooms for like over a 2 hour period, and I'm adapting it now to do in video formats. But I've also in the meantime created a Facebook group. One of the groups I've got is called Hairstyles South Africa. So that's grown very quickly. And in particular, I think during lockdown, because hairdressers were told they would only be able to open in level one. So there was a lot of drama and a lot of hectic stuff going on during that time. And we've come out victorious. A lot of people lost their businesses, and a lot of people have had to adapt and are looking for other places to work or to showcase their work. So that is what I do, is if I'm on Facebook and I see somebody who I happen to follow and it's a beautiful hairstyle, I will share it. But the platform is literally for that. It's a place for any stylists to go and share their before and after work. I want people to know where their talent is and what they can do. On there, what I've started to do now is create memberships, so that people can become a member of. If you're a stylist or a salon, you can become a member of Hairstyle South Africa or Salon Central, and then you will have access to the videos that I was talking about, to the training videos, as well as two other extras, and I wanted to include consumers because there's a huge, even though there's over 7,000 people on the group, a large percentage of those are consumers. So I want consumers to be part of it. So I'm doing giveaways, and I've had some brands come on board now who've given us some products that we can use now as giveaways for them. So I've called that In It to Win It. So consumers can, just literally started
I
that this
love
week.
it.
And if they're in it. They can sign up on Salon Central and then they can win. So I've got some prizes that I've just got this week, but I need to create some content to tell people more about it and literally start doing it and going ahead with it. And then that way, giving the brands a platform to reach more stylists, salons, and consumers. And I really want to incorporate the beauty side into it as well, because it's my belief that fashion, hair, and beauty all go hand in hand. And if you have a hairstyle that looks a certain way, it usually tells a story of your own particular style, which is shown in the clothes that you wear as well. So I find that they all are a synergy together. So yeah, I'm trying to, I have got another group that is just called SA, South African, what is it? Fashion Beauty Decor South Africa, something like that. But those are the things that interest me, and I'd love to get the whole lot together, you know? Together. So that's my future going forward with that, in that way. Thank you.
Well, that sounds amazing.
I don't have a
good
brand
luck,
or product that I sell. So that. This is my brand and my product. So I need a little bit of buying and following from people from that point of view. But I'll give gladly. So anytime. Thank you.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Yeah. The law of reciprocation. It will come back.
Yes.
And the last question, with hindsight, if you could go back to the younger version of yourself, what would your top advice
Look
be
after
to her?
Yourself? Mentally, there was no such talk about that kind of thing when I was younger. There was no such thing about mental health and emotional wellness and vulnerability. There was no such thing about that. You were just, the men were in charge in a way, and women took second place in some ways. Not that I'm a feminist or anything in any way at all. I just think that things have got skewed. And I just think that we all need to appreciate who we are and the talents that God has given us, and to not steer away from those. Keep to your authentic self and look after your mental well-being and your authenticity. And don't let people walk all over you, but help each other where you can.
Thank you, Ursula. And thank you so much for joining us
on
the podcast
today. I appreciate it. And I look your podcast on my platforms as well, so that we can grow each other.
If you enjoyed today's episode and you want to transform your salon's digital marketing strategy, contact Ursula on Hairstyle South Africa or on www.saloncentral.co.za. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on today's episode of the Red Lips and Stilettos podcast. If this podcast is something that inspires you or sparks that inner flame in your belly, I would love you to join the conversation. Become engaged. Let this podcast re-inspire, motivate, and connect you to the why you chose this industry. Every Friday morning, South African Standard Time, a new episode will be released. I look so forward to our next episode, but that is it for now. Until next time, stay safe and most importantly, stay connected.